Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I'm joined today by my buddy, Matt Friedman. Talked to Pat Corain yesterday. Just really, it's tis the season. Matt, it does actually finally feel like football season, like just grinding out drafts every day, training camp reports. Like it no longer feels like a fantasy to me that we are going to have professional football, which is a good feeling.
Yeah, no, it really certainly feels like it. Part of it is that we're getting those reports every day from training camp, a lot of them by the team websites, where it's like, this guy showed up in phenomenal shape. And then it's like, oh, this guy's really formed a connection with his quarterback. And, you know, so it's that, like, that always makes me feel like we are in the peak season of like, yes, we are almost home.
Have you DM'd any beat writers?
No, I don't reach that level of degeneracy. And part of it is I don't want to seem like a creep, but I also don't want to spend the time doing stuff like that. I'll let other people kind of source that information.
So I have to be honest, I have been doing this because, you know, the lifeblood of my fantasy football strategy is you got to hit on late running backs, right? You have to find running backs after round 10. That are going to be playing passing downs, that are going to be getting goal line work. And to be honest, as a beat writer, you don't like, that's not really part of your job. Like you're not really trying to be like, oh yeah, you know, it was Corey Clement who was getting the goal line work or was playing the 2-minute drill. Like it's more like what I've kind of noticed this off season is that the beat writers are really liking to do the human interest story. So it's like, you know, this guy, tough life, this guy's wife has cancer, this guy's mom is immunocompromised or whatever, but he's continuing to play or not play. And then, you know, just always the undrafted free agents who are having a good camp and might make the team. Those stories are really popular. We're not getting a ton of reporting. Weirdly, the Patriots beat writers are very good about this, about being like, this guy played with this guy and received this many snaps, this many carries, but I don't see other teams beat writers doing that well. This is all a very long way of saying I have been in the DMs of a fair number of teams beat reporters because we're just not getting reporting on stuff that we would have just seen in preseason games, basically.
Okay, well, give me a nugget. Or one, I guess the question, first question, have you actually gotten any information that you think is actionable? And then second, give me the nugget that you think has been most useful that you've gotten.
I don't really want to do this because it is actually like a pretty big nugget in terms of how ADP goes right now, but no Chiefs beat reporter is willing to say that DeAndre Washington is the number two running back in Kansas City. I literally spent this morning like messaging a bunch of them and they were all pretty much like, yeah, no, it's Daryl right now. And Washington has like, you know, the good fit or whatever, like the good theoretical fit, but he just really hasn't been a part of what they've been practicing at all, which I think is fascinating considering that DeAndre Washington, so over the last couple days in the main event, last 3 days, DeAndre Washington is going RB51, 134th overall. Daryl is going RB76, 222nd overall on average.
Yeah, that's actually – I feel like I read that somewhere. One, I feel like there was a beat reporter that did say Daryl Williams was actually working in with the first reps.
So it's been reported that Daryl Williams is playing with the ones, but it hasn't been reported why or you know, any specific. And then we had Darwin Thompson a couple days ago saying, you know, I shouldn't be a fantasy football sleeper, like, because Darwin likes to talk to the media more than the other running backs, I think, for whatever reason. And so he just, like, we've gotten, like, Darwin Thompson quotes about, you know, I like to play. I've been teaching Clyde Edwards-Helaire a few things, like, just, like, funny stuff like that. But, yeah, just in terms of, like, real great information on running back timeshares, the one really useful, widely reported nugget is – Zach Moss is getting a ton of passing down work, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. So I need to make adjustments. I have it already on my list for the next round of updates I'm going to do on player projections. I need to update Darrell Williams, and I don't know if I can update Moss anymore. Like, I feel wrong if I give him any more of the receiving work share.
How much of the receiving share in that backfield do you have for him right now?
So I have Singletary getting 42% of the carries and 9% of the targets on a per game basis. And Moss getting 7%. So, you know,
That's 7%
of the receiving, 34% of the rushing. And so given what we saw out of Singletary last year, and given that I still have him with the rushing edge, I think he deserves the slight edge in receiving. But, you know, Moss is going to be, I think, more of the receiving back relative to the rushing workload.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, the thing is like, in terms of priors, is like, I didn't think Singletary was that good after his combine stuff. And I think the same is true of Moss. So like, I don't see like a real clear talent edge between the two of them. So to me, it really does just kind of dictate, like, or the coaching is going to kind of dictate all of how I treat them, especially in season. Like if it turns out that this Moss stuff is exaggerated, like, I'm not going to be like, oh, well, this is clearly, you know, a suboptimal coaching decision or whatever. I'll just be like, just the Moss stuff was just a little bit exaggerated in the off season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, Moss was the superior pass catching back in college, and he does have the size advantage. So, you know, like, I'm thinking he's probably going to get the goal line touches. He's probably going to get, you know, targets. I mean, if he has just a little more rushing workload than people think he's going to have, then he could be one of those zero RB guys who ends up popping.
Yeah. So we are going to get into like our big zero RB list here in a little bit, but I kind of wanted to just talk about some weird things that I see in main event ADP right now, right? Because everyone is kind of really gearing up for everyone is gearing up for it, getting ready. One of the things I think is strange is we've gotten no good Nick Chubb reporting, like none. Like, he had a concussion. Nothing about expanded role in the passing game, monopoly, like literally nothing. Like no good Nick Chubb nuggets. He's still going RB13, 20th overall, whereas we have gotten some good stuff on Aaron Jones, James Conner. We've seen a slight rise for Jonathan Taylor. I can't see myself drafting Nick Chubb in a main event at this point.
I have zero Chubb in anything. And it's not as if I think he's a bad player. But, you know, we don't know how that Kevin Stefanski offense is going to translate from Minnesota to Cleveland. Like, maybe it won't take. We think it will be good, but maybe that just doesn't work out. We have no idea what the split is going to be between Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And here's the thing that I don't think anyone wants to talk about, or many people don't want to say. Kareem Hunt legitimately might be the better running back.
Might be better, yeah.
Like, he's probably not, but we know he's the better receiver, and he's probably good enough as a runner to make it pretty competitive there. So, yeah, I'm way off on Chubb. I think he actually carries really underappreciated risk this year.
Yeah. So like, I think that is, that's like an FFPC grinder move. Like, I'm starting two running backs. I don't care what the running backs are. I'm just taking the guy who takes Josh Jacobs is so likely to take Nick Chubb with his next pick. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And they're just like high fiving that start. Like, they're just like, I got my two workhorses, 400 carries combined between the two of them. Like, lock it up. A guy I do think that we've seen a huge rise from, I'm very curious your position on this guy, Jonathan Taylor, like we've seen, like he's basically risen up around since training camp has started.
No, I mean, I'm still going to say no. He was he at running back 18 now, something like that. Like that's the vicinity in which he's going. And that just seems aggressive. You know, that's a risk seeking move. And I get it based on his talent and his physical profile, but Marlon Mack is still going to have an annoying number of carries and Nyheim Hines is going to have an annoying number of targets. And so, you know, even if Jonathan Taylor is great, I still think it's going to end up being like 1,000 yards and not as many touchdowns and targets as you want.
So this is great because you and Dave Caban were just talking about this on, what is actually, I don't even know what the name of your specific podcast is called because I just listened to it in the
Road of His Radio. I mean, yeah. it's the flagship.
It's flagship show,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you guys were talking about, you know, the projections that matter, right? And how Dave is really harps on this about how there are just so many things that go into a median projection. It's very hard to accurately represent one player as one number. And I like median projections. I think they're very useful in fantasy. I think you can you generate great drafts over the course of an offseason by seeing what your projections can tell you. However, in the specific case of Jonathan Taylor, I think median projections fail him because it really just it's very hard to account for the fact that Jonathan Taylor like might just be like Saquon, right? And he might just show up and be so good and be so efficient and just defenders are just bouncing off of him and he just relegates Nyheim Hines and Marlon Mack to just total obscurity. And we don't even like to talk about running backs that way as like, you know, running backs don't matter people, but like coaches are going to be really influenced by that stuff for sure. And like Jonathan Taylor is a great running back prospect. Like he looks like a guy who's going to be great. And I think that I actually think that like when you account for, depending on how likely you think that stuff is, I actually think that if you took Jonathan Taylor in the second round, I'd be like, I get it. Like I really do get it.
Okay. So it's sorry, my dog barking in the background. She doesn't like what you're saying. Adrian Peterson is the guy who comes to mind in this scenario where even though he had Chester Taylor as the, you know, ostensible lead back on that 2007 Vikings team, he came in and he didn't outright steal the job because Chester Taylor still had an annoying workload. Enough to where it's like, come on, just unleash Adrian Peterson. But Peterson still had 238 carries that year and looked awesome. So it's possible. It's possible. And he is that – Jonathan Taylor is that freakish kind of talent where you could see that happening. I would rather not bet on it at his ADP. You know what I'm saying?
Well, so – and there's also worth having this discussion. So right now I'm looking at main event ADP, right? The entire goal of this is – I mean, first off, you really like to make the playoffs in your league so that you can recoup your $1,900 entry fee. But I like players like Jonathan Taylor much more in that format because the Jonathan Taylor hitting season in the third round – like let's say you drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round, Davante Adams in the second round, or George Kittle in the second round, and then you wrap that around with Jonathan Taylor, you're basically slam dunking that. Like that is set up to be a championship team with an RB5 season from Jonathan Taylor.
Yes. I would rather – okay, so two thoughts, and I want to get your opinion on this because there might be some anchoring bias on this. Yeah. I would always have the feeling that if I drafted him now in the third round, I really screwed up because I should have just
– because you're going to get beat by teams that drafted him in the fourth.
Yeah, I should have gotten him in the fourth and fifth round months ago instead of investing in him as a third rounder now. And I should have been able to predict – that his ADP would rise the closer we would get to the season. So that's one thing. The second thing is that I would still look at some of the other players going in that vicinity. And so maybe James Conner isn't available at that point. But if Connor's on the board and Taylor's on the board, I'm taking James Connor every time.
Yeah, I prefer Connor too. I'm trying to get in the mind of the people that are pushing Jonathan Taylor's ADP all the way up, because it's a real thing.
Oh, it's they're seeking upside, and in a format like the main event, I think that makes much more sense. Normally we think, okay, it's my team versus 11 other teams, and so I play it safe for the first maybe five rounds, and then I seek upside after that. The upside seeking gets pushed higher and higher the more teams you're competing against. So people are going for Jonathan Taylor earlier in this format because of his upside, and they're thinking, okay, starting in round three, I need to start taking bigger risk than I normally would.
For me, it is kind of like, as you say, like round five and round six, I'm ready to start taking shots. So like, for example, last 3 days, main event ADP, these guys are all going in a row from picks 54 to 59, Montgomery, Hunt, Akers, Jones, Mostert, Singletary. Like, to me, taking Mostert or Singletary there is just playing way too conservatively, especially to start the year, basically.
I was muted. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, there are some guys like Akers I would want there. Ronald Jones we've talked about, but yeah, Montgomery and Mostert. I'm staying away.
Yeah, I think there are more examples of this, especially. So to me, I feel like there is this huge divergence in strategy between different minded people in round 7, 8, and 9 this year. And you really see it borne out with, it's hard to see it in ADP, but where you see it is with the min maxes on guys, where some guys go really early in high stakes drafts and some guys, like literally those same guys, can slip like 40 picks. So for example, here in the 7th round, I mean, just such a crazy mix of players. You have two of the safest guys ever in Julian Edelman and Jarvis Landry. Then they're tailed by Mike Gesicki. And then, so perfect, we have Antonio Gibson and Tarik Cohen going back-to-back, which is literally, you could not find a more perfect dichotomy of, I only care about getting first, or I only care about not getting worse than 6th in my league in those two picks, right?
Yeah.
And it, your picks in these rounds are so dictated by your overall strategy.
Yeah. It's, you know, here's a question. Would you rather have Jonathan Taylor at his current, you know, like recent inflated, moving up the board main event ADP, or Antonio Gibson at his ADP? Because I think they have similar types of upsides. I think it'll be easier for Taylor to hit his upside than Antonio Gibson, because he'll have to overcome, I think, maybe some other people, but maybe not. Maybe it's honestly even odds that they hit their upside. I would rather have Antonio Gibson, but I mean, maybe I'm off there.
I would rather have Antonio Gibson at his cost, just because the cost of missing on an 8th round pick is so low compared to, like, if Jonathan Taylor is David Montgomery from last season, like, spoiler, you're not going to be winning the main event,
right?
And that's brutal. Yeah. So whereas if Antonio Gibson is David Montgomery, like, not that they're similar sire players, but if he finishes, you know, RB23 or whatever, at his cost, that actually is more valuable, right?
Yeah.
Okay, in terms of the FFPC, and like, everyone gets into these holy wars about tight ends here every year because they go so high relative to your average league. Like, you know, if you're doing these best ball drafts on Underdog or you know, Drafters or wherever, you know, you can get you know, Mike Gesicki, Noah Fant, TJ Hawkinson, you can get these guys 11th, 12th, 13th round. Like, the opportunity cost does not feel great. Whereas you are, like, for example, you have to take TJ Hawkinson over CeeDee Lamb and in the main event if you want him. And that's a very hard decision to make. So, like, and I've been having this argument with Karain and Overzet for like 2 months now about Gesicki versus Fant versus Hawkinson. Where do you fall on those three, and kind of what is your preferred tight end strategy in like these high stakes leagues on the FFPC this year?
I am inordinately high on Fant And it's for a few reasons. One, I mean, obviously we saw what he did last year. He was really productive with the opportunities that he had. And the production with that efficiency, you know, put him in an upper echelon of rookie producers, thinking of guys like, you know, George Kittle, Gronk, I don't want to name, that's too sacred to say, but guys of that caliber. And I think he's going to have more opportunities this year than people are expecting for a few reasons. One, that offense, I think, is going to be better than expected. Transitioning from Rich Scangarello to Pat Shurmur, not as if there's anything all that special about Pat Shurmur, but
he throws so much.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And he plays at a faster pace. In the five games last year with Drew Lock at quarterback, they had 57.8 plays per game. Pat Shurmur, generally we're seeing his offenses play, you know, 61 to 63 and a half, some cases even 65 offensive plays per game, and they throw much more. So I'm just expecting that offense to be better, to throw more. We see Drew Lock progressing from his rookie year to a second season. Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler, I think, will be nice additions, but I don't know actually how much they're going to take away in terms of targets from Noah Fant. So I'm very optimistic on Fant. Like, I think he has real top five upside at the position. Just athletically, I mean, he's George Kittle in terms of his athleticism, not in terms of what he does as a blocker, but as a receiver, that's, I think, what he is. So I'm investing in Fant very heavily, especially because you can, you know, get him fairly late. So that's the best part of it. Nothing against Hawkinson, but, you know, he's still dealing with that injury from last year, which I think is a massive red flag, and he has target competition.
So I gotta bring up the talking point that it's like, he's still practicing every day. Like, Hawkinson is still going to, like, he still looks good. You know, they're not like giving it, he's not, certainly not walking around in a precautionary boot, like Kenyon Drake. So the only thing that report on Hawkinson did for me was move him, like, where if Fant and Hawkinson are both on the board, I'll take Fant instead. Whereas before, I was kind of just coin flipping and taking one or the other, like thinking they're both pretty solid.
Yeah. I mean, I was already a little pessimistic about Hawkinson for this season, just because of the target competition. And then with the added knowledge that he doesn't believe he's 100% yet, that's pretty big. So a little pessimistic on Fant. Hawkinson, pessimistic on Hawkinson. Fant is someone I prefer. Gesicki, he's kind of in the middle there. I probably prefer him a little bit to Hawkinson, but it's not as if, like, I'm going out of my way to get Gesicki in a lot of leagues. Like, I think it will be Devontae Parker and Preston Williams as the two main guys. And I'm not, like, putting much stock in the Ochan-Gailey has never done anything with his tight ends narrative. Like, Gesicki plays very much as a slot receiver or splits out wide sometimes. Like, I think he's going to get his targets, but I just don't think it's going to be a great offense on the whole.
Yeah, I think that seems, you know, mostly reasonable. I think that I think they're all good, right? I think they're all good. Those are the guys that I am not taking this Peter King report on Gronk. I totally buy it. I totally buy that Gronk is third downs and red zone only, and he's like 700 yards, six touchdowns. Like, and I love Gronk, you know, his best seasons. I think he was, you know, one of the most impactful players in football history in terms of non-quarterbacks and affecting wins. But I don't really think that he is, don't really think that he's that guy anymore, which, you know, is not a bad thing. It just is the way that it is, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Gronk, I have him closer to 750 and 6.5 touchdowns. That doesn't really change anything, you know? I mean, like, yeah, that's the same wheelhouse. So I agree. I'm not really expecting a lot from Gronk.
Yeah, not really interested in Jared Cook, not really interested in Hooper, not really interested in Goddard. Jonnu Smith is interesting to me. Blake Jarwin is interesting to me. Ebron is interesting to me. Ian Thomas, but, you know, then we're getting into guys who are, like, not starters.
Have you taken the Chris Herndon plunge?
Well, now he's expensive. Like, it's like, it would have been nice to like, kind like, I wasn't, so like, I preferred Irv Smith and Blake Jarwin to him where he used to go. And people are so irrational, or maybe not irrational, but people just love Herndon. And so now he just goes like in the 10th round, and you don't even really have the opportunity.
Yeah, it's with Herndon, it's this weird situation where he was so productive as a rookie and very efficient to where like it put him in this tier of tight ends historically where you think, okay, if he can do just sort of on average what these other guys have done, like he's someone I want on my fantasy teams. But the thing is, on every list, I talked about this with Ian Harditz, on every list like this, there's always one guy. It's like Hall of Famers and then one guy to where you look at it and it's like, oh, who's that?
Yeah, like the one guy who had a really good stretch because of like, for whatever reason, just had a really good stretch to begin his career. I mean, Josh Gordon is that list when you run all-time wide receiver comps now. Like when you're doing like the DJ Moore or the AJ Brown like comps and you're like, wow, look at all these amazing Hall of Famers and Josh Gordon.
Right, exactly. And so I'm scared that's what Chris Herndon is going to be. You know, because on this list, there's also no one who did absolutely nothing their second season. And there's also no one who had Adam Gase as his head coach and Sam Darnold as his quarterback. So I'm just a little pessimistic about Herndon, although I see the upside there.
Yeah, I think that seems about right. So the main reason I wanted to do this show, though, was we're all sitting here waiting for bated breath for Sean's zero running back list to come out. But it is time. You know, we are 2 weeks away from the start of the season. Most of people's drafts are going to be happening this week and in the upcoming week. So I think it is time to do like the official zero running back list. I think about 2 months ago, we chatted about some of our guys. I put out a list of guys that I was drafting in like June, but you know, that list is obviously a little bit different now. So I kind of want to go, you know, counting backwards from like the tertiary targets to the guys we like the most. So kind of like the background guys where they're on my list. I definitely take them, but I am not, windmilling them in are going to be the, it's for me right now, it is Nyheim Hines and Darrington Evans. Evans was higher on my list before the start of training camp, but basically it seems like, he is probably the handcuff to Derrick Henry, but he has not done enough at training camp to earn standalone value. Like they're not going to be creating like 8 touches a game for him the way they used to for Deion Lewis. So still a guy I take, still on the list, but not really a slam dunk. And then Hines is, you just take Hines when you your first running back you take is Zach Moss, and you got to get some points.
All right, so a couple, these are really deep, nasty names.
Yeah, this is like tier 5.
Yeah. Any thoughts on Giovanni Bernard? Because
I prefer Travion.
Okay. I could see Bernard still having a little bit of a role. And like, he is the original Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you know, just in terms of like what he was in college, his athletic profile, his receiving ability. And, you know, he had like 1,200 yards from scrimmage, I think, like his first 3 seasons. I could kind of see him, you know, potentially if things break right, actually having his own carved out receiving niche role. And then if Joe Mixon gets injured, I mean, we've seen in the past what Bernard has been able to do when he's been the lead back.
Yeah, he's like he's very like 16 points a game, probably around that if he was as a starter.
Yeah, so he's someone who's kind of intriguing to me. And then I'm just trying to think of this Atlanta offense. Like, it's totally nasty, but like that backfield situation is not good. But that offense is really good. It will produce touchdown opportunities for someone, and I just do not have much faith in Todd Gurley. And so I have to think someone from that backfield will have an opportunity, and Brian Hill is the guy who just kind of pops to me as someone who might be able to take
he would be the one, but he's not
a pass catcher, so he's not a good zero RB target.
Hey, he's okay. His first NFL touchdown was a 25-yard touchdown reception.
Yeah, okay, so that's fair. But he's not an established regular part of the receiving game. It's not like it's a skill
Neither is Ito, really.
Yeah.
So I think the reason to take Brian Hill over Ito is that if you were going to imagine one of those guys just kind of supplanting Todd Gurley because Gurley's knees are so bad, it would be Hill would be the supplanter, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the lens in which I'm viewing him, is that he somehow gets the lead job and he's good enough on his own and that offense is good enough to where he gets a decent number of fantasy points.
Yeah. So some of the other, like, really, I don't like taking these guys, but they're fine in that range. It's like LeSean McCoy, Ito Smith, the aforementioned Mike Davis for the Carolina Panthers. Seems like he has beat out Reggie Bonifant for the number two job. Rex Burkhead, you know, like these are not guys that you're excited to take, but they're like, we're in the 18th round. I just need someone like who I think is going to make the team and score some points.
One more I want to mention, and this is probably a bad one, but do you have any thoughts on Corey Clement? Because if Miles Sanders were to suffer an injury, and like there's already talk of him, like, oh, he's had some sort of lingering issue.
You think Scott would stay in the pass catching role and Clement would be the Josh Adams?
Yeah, exactly. Clement in 2018, he had a 23% rushing share, on a per game basis. Last year, he did nothing, but that's because he was on IR for most of the season. And for the first five games when he was healthy, he had three other backs in front of him. You know, like we've still seen a situation in Philadelphia for like 4 years now where they've used a committee. And Clement, when he's been healthy, like he's actually been an established part of the committee when there aren't better guys in front of him, or when there aren't enough better guys in front of him.
Yeah. I don't think I've taken
it's
him
thin.
Once.
It's thin. But I haven't taken him. I haven't taken him, but I'm looking at him and being like, he's the guy who's going to screw this up.
So I think the thing is like they sign Isaiah Crowell or Devonta Freeman or whatever, if that happens is probably the thing that's most likely.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, so next group of guys that I get a little bit more excited about, Eno Benjamin, especially with this news that, for whatever reason, Kenyon Drake is in a walking boot. Lynn Bowden Jr., a guy I'm really excited about, but obviously just like he has Jalen Richard and Devontae Booker, and like he has so much competition, so it's hard for me to put him in that third tier or like a little bit better of a group. Darwin Thompson I think is in that group, and then I'm very hesitant to go here, but Malcolm Brown in team practices this last week for the Los Angeles Rams was getting the first carries, and I got excited about Malcolm Brown last year because of the, lack of health basically for Todd Gurley. The issue is he's not a pass catcher and he seems to not be very good, but you know, it might be a situation where Sean McVay gets kind of stubborn about, get stubborn about giving him carries. And then Carlos Hyde is in this tier as well. Don't feel great about any of these guys, but these are all guys I see paths to carries for in different ways. You know, like I think Darwin and Lynn Bowden are very similar in the sense of they don't have very clear roles right now, but they're like players that we think have upside were they to get touches. And then Malcolm Brown and Carlos Hyde are kind of the other way, where we don't feel great about their talent, but we see a pretty clear path to them getting like 15 carries a game.
Yeah. So I used to be a little bit higher on Bowden. I bumped him down a little bit. Vic Taffer, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, from The Athletic, had the reports about, Bowden not really flashing in camp. And then the team is insistent that they want to get Josh Jacobs more third down work.
I don't buy that at all. That's total smoke and mirror. It's just literally will not happen.
Why wouldn't it happen? Like they
Jalen Richard contract extension, Devontae Booker, and Riddick, dude. Like how many more third down back? Devontae Booker is on this roster. Like they have four third down.
I know that there are these other guys who should, given that they're on the team, it seems like they should compete for targets. But they did invest the first rounder in Josh Jacobs. He is a good player. Like he should be able to hold these guys off if he's as talented as we think he is. And like, I think he's a pretty talented guy. Like if you are the Raiders and you invested a first rounder in Josh Jacobs last year, are you going to take him on the field to put Theo Riddick on just so you can throw Theo Riddick the ball? Like, I think Jacobs actually might get a little more third down work than we're planning on. Not a lot, but enough to where these other guys don't seem as consequential. So it's Bowden is the guy I like the most out of all of the backups. But I bumped him down just a little in my most recent projection updates.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have a favorite between Josh Kelly and Justin Jackson? Because that seems to be a pretty popular, you know, direction for people to go. Like that, those guys are.
Yeah.
Having an opinion on one of those two is a pretty popular zero RB strategy. My guess is, but if we're prognosticating here, I think that Josh Kelly is going to be on Sean's list and Justin Jackson will not.
Josh Kelly's my guy out of those two. He has more draft capital. He's bigger. He's got pretty decent athleticism for his size. And, you know, I'm not expecting him to do much in the receiving game. I'm not expecting either Jackson or Kelly to do much in the receiving game because, I mean, that's what Eckler is
there
for.
Should be all Eckler.
Yeah. But I think he will probably play a little more of that Melvin Gordon type of role. I think if they looked at Jackson and thought, okay, this guy can be a really good supplement, they wouldn't have invested as high of a pick in Josh Kelly as they did.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyone else in this more – We're getting close to like the tier of guys you actually want to draft and think you might be able to play some weeks is like kind of the third tier. So we're more interested here.
Yeah. If we're you give me your guys in the third tier because I want to be sure I don't steal your thunder on some of these guys I might want to talk about.
So we have Jerick McKinnon, who I think is really strong. And so he goes higher, but I do not love him as much. Darrell Henderson, where like I really like Cam Akers. I think that there's a very good chance he is just the lead back, but there certainly is some chance that Darrell Henderson is. He was a great prospect. He was a guy I liked last year and seemed like he got banged up and seemed like he, you know, just didn't really have a chance to produce on the field. And then Darrell Williams, you know, I think Darrell Williams is definitely in this tier. He is not a prospect. You like literally like I think like Zach Mossian levels of athleticism cut from the Packers practice squad. So none of that like freak athletic profile stuff that we like to talk about. But he seems to have the trust of Andy Reid, seems to be the preferred option to DeAndre Washington at this point, who is still higher than Darrell Williams on my zero RB list because I think that Chiefs backfield is such a great spot to invest. But yeah, I mean, I think we have to include Darrell Williams on this list. He's a legit guy to invest in at this point.
Yeah. I mean, he's a barrel to tackle. And I could see it ahead of DeAndre Washington, and that he does know the offense. He is familiar. Where are you going to end up putting on your list someone like AJ Dillon, or is
AJ Dillon is not premium tier? I think there are four guys who are premium tier zero RB.
Okay,
and he is like second tier. Like he is like, if I can get AJ Dillon at cost, so like 14th, 15th round, I think that's like a total windmill. But when I'm having to go Boston Scott or AJ Dillon, you know, like I'm like that's not a contest. I'm just taking Boston Scott easy.
Yeah. Any thoughts on Benny Snell? Because there are, you know, there are the whispers.
Oh, he should be in this list too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there are the whispers that Jalen Samuels might get cut. You know, Anthony McFarland is a rookie coming in. Snell was very prolific in college. Not much of a pass catcher, but I think he might improve a little bit there. Still really young. And, you know, apparently, and this is, of course, the trope of offseason, but, you know, apparently he lost some weight during the offseason. So he's looking a little more athletic. So he's someone who's a little bit intriguing to me.
So I would be 0% intrigued by Snell of being like, I think he's buried behind like 19 dudes. I think he has no pass catching upside, but Sean Siegel takes him in like every draft, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And so there's something I'm not seeing or something I don't know. I guess also one of the things is Tomlin said Benny Snell is James Conner's direct backup when the Steelers convened for training camp. Is they were like, you know, Samuel and McFarland and Kareth White and Brooks James, like these are kind of like our offensive weapons, our passing down guys, and Conner and Snell are like the grinders.
Yeah, I mean, you know how obsessed I am with big-bodied SEC backs, and that's exactly what Snell is. So I'm very interested in him, knowing that it will take a James Conner injury. But, you know, Snell is someone who had like three seasons as the lead back at Kentucky and still being very young and big, like in an offense that I think could put up a lot of points. He's intriguing to me.
Yeah. Do you have anyone else to kind of add to this secondary, like not quite great tier? Cause AJ Dillon is premium tier for you.
You know, it's AJ Dillon probably does belong in this tier because I think it will take a lot. It will take an Aaron Jones injury for AJ
or Green. Fumble or like bad performance from Aaron Jones.
For AJ Dillon really to become the guy. I think he probably does belong in this secondary tier. But I mean, he's intriguing. He was super productive, big. He's Derrick Henry essentially. I think it will be harder for him in year one because Aaron Jones is on the team and is a very good player.
So again, kind of this, like, these are all very good targets, but because of cost, I think they're more like secondary tier. So DeAndre Washington would be premium tier, but I can't find any evidence that he is actually the running back two. I've found, you know, way more evidence that Darrell Williams is the running back two, but you know, of course, over 16 games, I think DeAndre Washington probably catches like 40 passes or whatever. And if something were to happen to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think that he would probably be more of the passing down and goal line back than Darrell Williams. I think Duke Johnson is permanently on this list. Duke Johnson's going to be like 30 years old and be like the seventh best zero RB candidate. I think Zach Moss and Matt Breida belong here where they're a little pricey, right? So like ninth round is more than you'd want to pay for those guys without certain knowledge. But, you know, obviously one of the things we know about running back breakouts is that they happen late, right? So like that they happen in uncertain situations more than they happen in certain situations. So like you're more interested in investing in backfields where we don't have a clear answer, which is true with the Bills and is true with the Dolphins. I'm not going to include Tevin Coleman, Kerryon Johnson, Jordan Howard, Marlon Mack on this list because I just think like those guys are fine, but I don't want like I don't know. Lindsey I take sometimes because it seems like he's going to catch passes, but yeah.
I was going to ask about Lindsey because he should be better as a receiver.
Yeah, I like Lindsey
than he is. You know, he has not been good in the pass catching department the past 2 years, but he should be better than he is. And he was good as a receiver in college.
Yeah. So like those guys, Antonio Gibson as well. I mean, Antonio Gibson was premium tier, but now he goes in the seventh round. So
it's too harder.
And Damian Harris too, by the way. Damian Harris, first couple days of practice, more receptions than N'Keal Harry, second in the backfield in receptions to only Rex Burkhead.
If you look at FFPC ADP for the past week, Damian Harris is now going ahead of Sony Michel. Damian Harris is going as RB.
I mean, Sony Michel is undraftable.
Michel is going as RB51 and AJ Dillon is RB52. Should we at least have the conversation about Sony Michel? Because like RB51 is really late for a guy who had 1,000 yards last year and like ostensibly is the number one runner on his team and has a first round like draft capital invested in him.
So this is my thing with Sony. First off, you don't even ever really know when you want to start him. He's like a touchdown dependent tight end. Like weeks where Sony Michel doesn't score touchdowns, like he is useless. Like he, yeah. like, because he's just not going to catch passes. And right. not only did he not catch passes when Tom Brady is the quarterback, he's really not going to catch passes when Cam Newton is the quarterback, because he is like, it's like 0% to get checkdowns for negative yardage. Like, Cam will just run instead. So, like, maybe the signing of Cam would improve the outlook for a healthy Sony Michel to, like, score a bunch of touchdowns or something. But just, like, no chance for me that this is a, like, I don't know. Like, I just don't see it with Michel at all.
I have one more name I want to mention that's kind of in the Sony Michel vein. And it's not so much because I'm actually considering him, but I can see people looking at him and wondering. Adrian Peterson as the RB53. I could see how someone would look at that and be like, you know what? 2 years ago, he had 1,200 yards. And last year, he had 1,000 yards. And it looks like he's going to be the lead back on this team. Like, and, you know, I can't, like, you can't disagree with that, because, like, that is accurate. It's just a question of whether he actually keeps that job moving forward. I mean, what do you think about Adrian Peterson at RB53?
I think that Bryce Love is closer to like a really good zero RB candidate, but the market, we talked about this a lot, like last week, like we were kind of anticipating the market going this direction, but I didn't anticipate it going this hard. What do you have to guess? What do you think Bryce Love's ADP is in the main event?
Oh man. RB65.
RB53, ahead of Sony Michel, Justin Jackson, Josh Kelly, Jerick McKinnon, ahead of Adrian Peterson, who is for sure going to start the year as the lead running back for the Washington football team.
Man, yeah, that's pure risk seeking. And I get it. You're shooting for that upside. But there's no way.
If you had to choose what's more likely, Bryce Love getting zero carries or Bryce Love getting greater than 150 carries, and you had to wager significant money on it, you would wager under zero instead of, or zero or fewer than over 150.
Yeah, zero. Yeah, I would do zero, because Adrian Peterson is still going to get carries at the beginning of the season, and Antonio Gibson, I think, will be good enough in the second half of the season to demand more carries.
Yeah, yeah. I'm definitely on board with that. Okay. Premium tier, it's Boston Scott, it is Tony Pollard, and it is Chase Edmonds. I think those are the premium tier zero running back candidates. I might be missing someone because I did not make a list. Like, I am just looking at my ownership percentages. So there's a possibility I'm missing someone.
Give those guys again. Tony Pollard.
Chase Edmonds, Boston Scott.
Zach Moss, is he too high?
Yeah. Let's put Zach Moss in the premium tier. I think Zach Moss is premium tier, because I bet in casual leagues, like I'm looking at high stakes ADP right now, my guess is your office league, whatever, you can get Zach Moss in the 12th round.
Okay. Thoughts on Alexander Mattison? Is he going too high?
Yes, he's the other one. Well, so we have this report. Field Yates reported that Adam Schefter reported that Dalvin Cook said the other day after training camp, if I don't have a new contract by the start of the season, I wouldn't draft myself in fantasy. He said that to Schefter or someone at Vikings training camp the other day.
Unreal.
Yeah. And that it like shows up to camp, says, oh, I was never going to hold out anyways. I don't even know where that rumor started. And then says that. So it's like, you know, you never know what these guys actually mean. But yeah, I think Madison should be at least in the premium handcuff tier, in the sense of like Dalvin Cook doesn't play, Madison will immediately project as a top 10 running back that week. And we're not afraid of him losing passing down work to Mike Boone or CJ Ham or whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, the real idea in part behind zero RB is that you can find some guys who have the pass catching ability anyway, and who can supplement that way. And Alexander Mattison doesn't really have it in the way that you typically think of, but I think he's good enough as a receiver to where if he becomes the lead back, he will be, you know, very locked in as the three down guy. And I think he should have a rushing role anyway.
Yeah, I mean, so there's different types of premium tier in terms of some guys have elite standalone value with elite contingent value. Some guys have very good contingent value, but like almost no standalone value. I think Madison is more in that category. I think that the guys that we envision having both standalone and contingent value are Boston Scott, Zach Moss, maybe DeAndre Washington, you know, just kind of depending on what happens. And then also, if we weren't getting such amazing reports literally every single day about CeeDee Lamb, I would also think that we'd be getting that for Pollard as well, because Pollard was really more of a pass catcher than a running back at in college, right? So, yeah. Fortunately or unfortunately, whatever, it seems like CeeDee Lamb is like basically the second coming of Dez Bryant in Dallas. So, I don't know if we're going to get to see that. I mean, my guess is probably during the bye weeks, you'll be able to start Tony Pollard. Some weeks it'll work out, some weeks it won't. You know, games where Dallas are favored by a ton, they've already shown that they'd use Pollard some. But I like Boston Scott is kind of the guy where I'm like, oh, he's going to get five targets a game and maybe some goal line work and just be a crusher.
He is Sproulesian in the way that he's going to be used.
Yes. Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Is there anyone we missed?
I don't think so. I think one more question would be someone like Latavius Murray, just because he might have a built-in role, but he's so old, you know.
He and Madison are very similar in the sense of like, sure, maybe they are premium tier or whatever, but it like literally it's so boring to even discuss them because you're only ever starting those guys in the event of an injury. And if Dalvin Cook and Alvin Kamara play 16 games, you know, it's just literally like, what's the point?
Yeah. I mean, do you think there is any potential that Latavius Murray gets a little more of the workload in an attempt to keep Alvin Kamara healthy and he has more of that kind of Mark Ingram type of usage versus what we saw out of him last year?
Well, I actually think last year was kind of like best case scenario for Latavius in-game usage because Kamara said he tore his knee.
Yeah.
Kamara said he was playing with a knee injury. It was the least efficient we've ever seen Kamara be, including his college sample. And Murray was still pretty useless when Kamara was active. Now, he was great when Kamara was out. He was, I literally think he scored 34 PPR points a game in the two games that Alvin Kamara missed. But yeah, I think that Murray's old. He will have great contingent value, but I basically think he has 0% standalone value.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I have very little Latavius Murray, so it's not as if I'm on the Latavius train here, just trying to kind of think about the possibilities with him. But yeah, I agree.
Well, and so I guess we can't, because Sean always includes a couple expensive guys on his list. For me, DeAndre Swift has supplanted Cam Akers as the guy to take in the fifth round. But I still like Akers, and the same for Ronald Jones, but they all go in the fifth round now, and Swift has become that guy for me. And there, like, where I think Miles Sanders was like the league winner last year for zero RB teams because he scored so many points over the second half of the season.
Yeah, I'm still on Akers or Jones over Swift. That backfield split with Kerryon Johnson, I think it's just going to be annoying. Although, I mean, Swift could be talented enough to where he just banishes Kerryon to the bench and, you know, that's it. But I'm still on Akers and Ronald Jones.
Kerryon's knee, I think, is going to banish him on his own.
That's fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anything you've been kicking around wanting to chat about? Any big strategy points or camp news?
No. You mentioned Tony Pollard and CeeDee Lamb, and I want to talk about the Cowboys just a little bit. And I don't remember if we've talked about this or not, but I think Amari is going to play in the slot. Like I think he's going to be sort of like their juju, because CeeDee Lamb, I think, makes more sense on the perimeter than in the slot. He didn't play in the slot all that much in college. Gallup is locked into the perimeter. Like he's just not the type of guy who plays in the slot, but Amari has played there before. I think he's out of the three receivers, the most natural fit in the slot. And if he's in the slot, I think he's going to absolutely dominate.
Rocket
so
ship.
Like yeah. I am very optimistic on Amari Cooper this year. And, you know, like I don't want to say that I have him projected in the top five, but like, I mean, I can really easily see how it happens. So I'm very invested in the Cowboys and in Amari Cooper specifically this year, and Gallup too. I think Gallup provides a lot of value in his ADP, but I'm very interested in Amari and this idea of him playing in the slot in particular. And I don't kind of get why other people aren't talking about how these Cowboys are going to align when they're on the field, because someone's going to have to play in the slot. We know it's not Gallup. So it's like, okay, it's maybe a 50-50 chance it's Cooper. I don't see them putting Lamb in the slot full time and being like, hey, pretend like you're Randall Cobb. Like, that's just not the best way to use CeeDee Lamb.
Such a bummer. It would be a big bummer if they just had CeeDee Lamb, who's like this really acrobatic, great boundary wide receiver, who's great at creating separation, great at contested catches. And they were like, yeah, we just want you to run a bunch of 7-yard slants. Like, no one wants that.
No, but that's perfect for Amari, you know, like that's actually probably the best way to use him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I actually kind of disagree, because Amari is a fantastic route runner. Like, Amari can shape, like, you kind of want Amari on the outside because teams will put their best cornerback on him. And I mean, I love Michael Gallup. I think he's great, but Amari is like a better player at creating separation and generating positive plays against elite cornerbacks. Like, Amari is, we always go too far with this shit. You know what I mean? Like, we go to like, oh, Michael Gallup is the same as Amari Cooper because he had more targets per game. But like,
right,
guys, Amari is better than Michael Gallup. Like, Gallup's really good, but Amari is great. And yeah, so I think that if I was, you know, Kellen Moore or Mike McCarthy, I'd be like, It is a tactical advantage to have a number one wide receiver outside who can demand the attention of the best cornerback, but then also still get open against the best cornerback. Like, that sucks for the defense to have to contend with.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I just think it's a massive tactical advantage to have Amari on the inside. Like, with his route running, I think he could like just absolutely destroy slot cornerbacks. And you could still have Gallup competing on the outside with number one cornerbacks. And I think he could still do well enough. And then you have Lamb on the outside. Like, just in terms of their skill sets, I think Amari in the middle makes the most sense. But, you know, I don't know. We'll just, you know, we'll wait and see till week one, you know?
Yeah. We don't have big news or anything right now, but Mike Williams probably going to miss the first couple weeks. Seems like the shoulder injury is a big deal.
I know that's a bummer, because I thought this might be a Mike Williams season, but no, it's just going to be kind of boring Keenan Allen season once again.
Yeah. What can you do? Well, maybe we get 16 healthy games of Hunter Henry, right?
I guess so. I mean, when I updated projections this morning, I did bump up Hunter Henry just a little bit based on that news, you know, shifted most of the targets that I think Williams will vacate over to Hunter Henry. So, yeah, I mean, I guess he's probably the big winner in this.
Who is your preferred last round pick in best ball drafts right now? Like you're there with your DK, it's your 20th round pick. On Underdog, it's your 18th round. Who are you taking right now?
I don't know. KJ Hamler used to be one that game, I was interested in, but he's going to miss games now. So I've had to sort of pivot that. And so, man, it's a little bit of a toss up. John Ross is still kind of interesting.
Yeah. I just took him in one. I'm starting to realize that, I think this Bengals offense could be sort of like 2018 Chiefsian, obviously not to the same degree, but like Burrow, if Burrow is really good, it's going to be kind of like a rising tide lifts all boats situation.
Yeah. I'm thinking sort of like McVay's first year in LA. Like, that's something potentially that we could see with the Bengals if everything goes well with Burrow. But yeah, John Ross, I think, still has a chance to be the number three receiver in that offense. And we really don't know what's going to happen with AJ Green. So I think there are multiple outs for John Ross to have some sort of productivity. And, because of the way he gets his points, like with the volatility, all you're looking for are just some big games that late in the draft. And I think Ross has the potential to do that.
Yeah. I mean, Ross is one of the quintessential spiked week guys like that. I like John Ross better in best ball. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, LaVisca Chenault, but he's probably not available all that late anymore. Like he's probably going a couple of rounds higher, but LaVisca in late rounds is someone who's, I feel like almost mandatory.
I mean, imagine going into a draft and not getting LaVisca Chenault.
Right.
He's going to be the wide receiver two day one, probably going to be the third string running back. And I don't know if that's true at all, but I like to believe it. Like he's going to be awesome. He's going to be great. Can't wait.
Yeah. He'll be great.
All right, everyone, follow Matt on Twitter at Matt F the Oracle. Loves the Twitter handle. Loves to be reminded of that. He's been doing these AMAs on Twitter. So if you have any questions for Matt, you probably have a good chance of getting it answered on Twitter right now, and read all of his work at Action Network and Fantasy Labs. And I'm sure he'll be back on again before the start of the season. Anything specific you want to plug?
No, just, yeah, check out Twitter, doing the AMAs every day. And, you know, we've got the award-winning Action Network podcast. And so be sure to check that out. Have Sean Corner and Chris Raybon on the show, and lots of good stuff there. So, yeah, check it out.
Okay, cool. Everyone, thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.